Put on your Steeler hats and your brown coats, kids. You've just been crammed inside the locker! Yes, it's Inside the Locker, the weekly nerdy sportscast that is fighting to get Pogs added to the Winter Games. I am your host, Brian Salisbury, heart of a champion, dumps like a truck. And I am joined by the Dream Team, if you have chronic nightmares. First, to my right, JC DeLeon.
I'm pretty dreamy.
She's pretty dreamy. We also have Elliot the Lawyer Fontanette.
What's up?
And our neighbor, Adam Charles.
I hated Pogs.
Get out.
Did you really? Were you not a fan of Pogs?
I was not a fan of Pogs. I guess I didn't hate Pogs. Did anybody really love Pogs,
I
though?
Did. I had not only did I love Pogs, I had a specific type of Pog that I collected. Collected 8-ball Pogs. Any Pogs that had 8 balls, like, featured, you know, like, an 8-ball with, like, a dragon coming out of it, or just an 8. In fact, I even went so far as to have, like, a playing surface, like a Pog playing surface that you, like, actually would have matches on. And this is all really exciting and totally something I want to be admitting.
Did you carry the playing surface around in a little briefcase?
I didn't carry it around in a briefcase, although I really should have, because it was as cool, in my opinion, as the Power Glove. But
or a pool cue.
Yeah, so I had one of those, and it was in the shape of an 8-ball as well, so...
So were you like a Pog hustler? Like, could you like flip the Pogs in between your fingers?
And... Like, did you have your Uncle Phil moment where you had to go rescue somebody else who was getting hustled in Pogs?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, all of these things happened to me, I promise.
Did you ever splash the Pog pot?
I did splash the Pog pot, which was winning. That's how you won Pogs, was you splash the pot.
I never understood Pogs.
And that voice you're hearing is...
Oh, yeah, by the way.
Our special guest. He's back, returning like Jason Voorhees on a merry-go-round. First showing's Jeremy K. Kirk.
I'm flashing red and blue, but I'm back.
Whoa.
I'm using cue cards now instead of a Word document, and I've decided that, like David Letterman, when I'm done with one, I'm just going to heave it. And that one almost gave Jeremy Kirk another concussion.
Yeah, David Letterman doesn't have people standing to his left when he does that for paper cuts.
And, it's a full-contact podcast. I don't know what to tell you.
Guillotine of paper
cuts.
Ricky
J with index cards.
Into a watermelon.
Look, I for one am happy at the return of the Kirk.
Oh, thank
return
you.
Return of Appreciate the Kirk.
Once again.
We knew that he'd be back. We actually did. We said that last week, so we knew that you'd be back. That's not a huge surprise.
I'm happy to be back. Thank you.
But you are back to join us once again for one of our totally accurate, desperately important Inside the Locker movie legend. That's me trying to get those words out and failing miserably.
Did you have a stroke?
I may have.
You would tell us, right?
I feel like I did. Let me try that again.
Like you swallowed Bill Cosby and something else came out.
Pudding. The
totally accurate, desperately important Inside the Locker movie elimination tournament! And this one...
That didn't seem that hard.
Yeah, well, shut up.
Oh, this is a bit of a bore.
You haven't been drinking as long as I have today.
I just gave you a beer. Okay, I was like, I just
I've
gave
been
you
in this
beer.
Office since, like, noon, so there was a lot more beer when the day started in the office fridge. Anyway, Jeremy is going to be joining us once again for our tournament, which today is centered on Die Hard ripoffs, but he will not be acting as judge, and we will get to that bit of intriguing news in just a moment, but first...
I felt I had a vested interest in debating this week.
I know, and I'm happy that you did, but stop the goddamn presses! It's sports news.
Flash, the Captain and Mrs. America and all the ships at Sequest. These are the scores and stories.
Stop the press!
And we're starting this week with Ronda Rousey, who beat Sarah... First of all, guys... We're talking about UFC.
Yeah.
So stop begging us to talk about UFC. I don't even mind talking about it. I'm more incensed by the idea that because we haven't mentioned it, we somehow hate the sport. It is people beating the shit out of each other. Of course we don't hate UFC. Come on. It is everything we love about every Van Damme movie. We're totally fans of USC.
And we're sort of afraid of those guys and girls anyway. So.
We are not fans of USC.
We are not fans of USC. We are fans of UFC.
Yeah, fuck USC. Yeah.
It's more an issue of inconvenience, really. Like, Saturday nights is kind of a busy time to have these tournaments. And plus, they're usually on pay-per-view, and I don't have any money.
True
story.
Are
you saying people with no lives love UFC?
No.
Those are big words.
People with no lives, I guess, lots of money.
Are you trying to make these people hate us more?
I'm just trying to make them hate JC.
That's fine.
Anyway, Ronda Rousey recently beat Sarah McMahon, TKO'd that competitor, without using her trademark armbar. Yeah, you guys.
That's very politically correct.
Did Justin Timberlake show up at
sweet
one point?
Sweet young lady, was that?
Yeah, that sweet young
sweet young thing. I'm sorry. Sweet sassy molassy.
Vicious vixen. I really stopped myself from going into like roller derby descriptions, like that maven of mayhem. Like, okay, so she beat Tara McMahon. That's the long and the short of it.
Are you going to talk about Glow next?
No, I'm not going to talk.
What about Roll Glow. Bounce?
Shut the. Anyway, what is the other one that we Whip It? Can we talk about Whip It as well?
That's actually a great movie.
Yeah, it is. We should do a whole episode on roller derby. This is why they hate us. This is why the people who love UFC hate this show. Because we segue into an Ellen Page movie about roller derby as we're talking about Ronda Rousey beating the shit out of Sarah McMahon and doing so without using her trademark armbar, which is apparently how she won every other match.
Yeah.
Which apparently, you know, based on the amount of coverage this is getting, is like Daniel LaRusso winning the All Valley tournament without the crane. Get him a body bag! It doesn't happen.
Yeah, from what I can gather, she used the time-tested strategy of punching the other opponent in the head multiple times.
Yeah,
yeah. Therefore, knocking them out.
Yeah, she won, like, in, what, 60-some seconds?
Yeah.
So she didn't sweep the leg?
No. Yeah. She just beat the face. She beat the face, which is the other Miyagi, the other Cobra Kai method.
They're like, just punch him in the fucking face.
On the floor.
Blood.
Beat the face.
Blood, just pretend. You know my okay, we didn't talk about Karate Kid 3.
Hammer the nail.
Karate Kid 3 for just a second.
Oh, horrible movie.
Yeah, okay, so the whole premise of Karate Kid 3, if you haven't seen it, I'm about to spoil it, sorry. The whole premise of Karate Kid 3 is that the guy that used to run Cobra Kai is now a complete bum and is about to leave the country when his friend, who is also a martial artist and a creep, and you know that because he has a ponytail.
Slick back hair.
Yeah. Slick back hair and a ponytail, decides what I'm going to do is I'm going to train Daniel LaRusso to get back in the All Valley tournament, but I'm going to give him really terrible advice so that he loses and is humiliated. Okay, fair enough. That's a plot for a film. However, if Daniel LaRusso can't see that he's getting fake advice by about the halfway point in that film, he kind of deserves to get his ass kicked in the All-Valley tournament. I'm sorry, when your advice is, hey, punch him in the face. Yeah, but that's illegal. Well, he ran into your fist. That's not illegal.
I feel like that makes a lot of sense. No, yeah. It doesn't.
I feel like something happened between Karate Kid 2 and 3 where Daniel LaRusso died and the Japanese cloned him, and it's not quite as smart.
So it's more like RoboCop 3.
There's a Karate Kid.
They have a robot, like, samurai.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a Karate Kid 2 and a half we haven't
seen. We're talking about a guy who went to a Halloween costume dressed as a shower.
Yes, his Halloween costume was a shower. That's very true.
Anybody who goes to a Halloween costume dressed as a shower deserves to get the shit kicked out.
Or a golden shower.
You know what? That's the theme of across all the Karate Kids. He always deserves to get the shit kicked out of him.
You are absolutely right, because even in the first film, he is whining that he wants to leave California to go back to his hometown in New Jersey. Yeah. I'm sorry, you're pissed off that you live in sunny California instead of New Jersey. You want to go back to New Jersey. That is a thing we're supposed to buy about you and also not root for you to get your ass kicked.
You know, he was also a 16-year-old kid.
I don't give a shit. When I was 16, I knew New Jersey sucked. Like, I'm sorry, that's an easy thing to figure out.
You're clearly smarter than Daniel
Russo. I am smarter than Daniel Russo.
Which is, talk about damning with faint praise.
Well, not only that, but it's like, do you not understand that you were being totally Tom Sawyered by Mr. Miyagi? Like, no, I'm teaching you martial arts. It's like, you're making me do chores. It's like Tom Sawyer tricking people into painting the fence.
Well, I tell you, that trope has been, like, staying alive.
Literally tricks him into painting the fence! I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Like, that trope has been staying alive, because in Arrow, the way they train them now is like, okay, well, we're going to have you hit water. And you just watch him hitting water for, like, a few episodes.
No. It's not that it's silly.
I feel like
it's specifically an old man tricking a kid into doing chores around his house under the guise of it being martial arts training.
That's what you're saying.
Well, I feel like this actually kind of lends credence to him actually being tricked into part 3. Apparently, old people can just trick him into doing whatever they want.
That's very true.
Guys, he was 16 years old.
Not in the third one. Third one, he's 34.
He's 19. He's 19.
He's 34 years old in the third one, I'm pretty sure.
He might have been 17 and a half in the third. I don't know.
I just like that. You're an idiot. You're an absolute fucking idiot. It's like, I'm learning martial arts. Like, no, you're painting an old man's fence.
Well, what did you think about the? Not to get too much off, but what did you think of the Jaden Smith Karate Kid?
I did not see it.
Really?
It's not bad.
I've heard it's not bad.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
I've heard it's not bad.
You can borrow it. I have it.
But the point of all this is that Ronda Rousey is clearly smarter than Daniel LaRusso and figured out that it's not about painting fences and waxing cars, it's about punching the other person in the face until they are knocked out. So congratulations to Ronda Rousey. Breaking! LeBron's nose. Recently, LeBron James, who is a player you might have heard of in the NBA, he was busted up while playing the Oklahoma City Thunder, and specifically broke his nose. He got knocked the fuck out of the game.
Yeah, he was on a drive against Serge Ibaka. Serge Ibaka hit him in the face, and then LeBron proceeded to dunk on him and not go to the free throw line because there was not a foul called. But, yeah, he started bleeding on the court and then had to miss the rest of that game, and he missed the game yesterday against the Bulls.
If you're going to get your nose broken in a game, it is cool to get your nose broken by the guy who sounds like a Bond villain.
Yeah. From the sidelines of the Thunder, can you just hear anybody just yelling, "He's cut! He's cut!"
Yeah, like, is Serge Ibaka now the bad Iron Man 2 villain where he's like, if God can be cut and he can bleed, then the shocks will come.
I do kind of feel that way. It's like, you know, what Leonidas did to Xerxes at the end of 300. It's like, just throw a spear, people see him bleed. Oh, he is mortal after all.
You never saw Michael Jordan bleed.
Well, he did have the flu, though, once.
Pretty sure he did bleed a few times.
Yeah, he also had the flu once in the NBA Finals. So.
Well, if he bled, it turned into wine. It was a whole thing.
I think this is all just an elaborate ruse, and that now LeBron is campaigning to be on the NBA Sphinx instead of the NBA's Mount Rushmore, because his nose is all busted up.
Maybe he LeBron so much that this is now the karma coming back. He didn't even get hit. It's just spontaneous bleeding.
He can actually manifest wounds now. He's flopping.
He got hit in the face, damn it.
So when he comes back, is he going to wear one of those face guards like Bill Laimbeer?
He might. He's done it before.
He's been locked in a French dungeon for 20 years.
Well, he's going to take 3 days to come back. 3 days.
Like he's in an Almodovar movie.
Yeah, exactly.
I almost got that out.
Oh, LeBron James. It's not that we revel in your misery.
I do. I don't.
I don't have an end to that sentence. Yeah, no. I don't have a second part to that statement. I do want to address something real quick. I actually do like LeBron as a player. His skills are unparalleled.
They pay the bills.
Well, except for the other people on NBA's Mount Rushmore. But he's an amazing player to watch. And it's just so easy sometimes for him to be the butt of jokes that he kind of sets himself up for, you know, by doing silly things like getting his nose broken in a game.
Come on, wearing a headband.
How are we not going to make fun of that?
Or wearing a headband that always goes back as his hairline recedes.
Yeah. I realize there's no way for me to pull out of this spiral. People are just going to assume that I hate LeBron James.
Yeah, don't ever pull out.
Yeah, we'll just leave it. We'll leave that as the prevailing theory. Moving on, JC says there's an imminent power shift in the NBA. Could you be more cryptic?
Well, the trading deadline came and went last Thursday, and for the most part, it kind of went through with not a big deal happening because that's the way the trade deadline usually goes.
Yeah.
But at the last minute, Indiana announced a trade of Danny Granger to Philadelphia for Evan Turner.
I did hear about this, and my response: I know who Danny Granger is. Who is Evan Turner?
Evan Turner went to Ohio State. He was I don't remember if he won the Naismith Player of the Year award, but he was a dude who put up 25 points a game in college, and he's just a dude who gets buckets all over the place. And initially, my reaction to the trade was I had never really been worried about the Pacers up in this entire season, because if you watch the Heat right now, they're pretty much turning it on, and when they're on, nobody can beat them. But that trade did kind of have me worried for a little bit, but then I don't know if Evan Turner is going to get along with Lance Stephenson. Plus, there's the issue of Danny Granger, who used to be a really good player for the Pacers, is probably going to force a buyout from Philadelphia, and he can go to any team he wants, and there are rumors that he wants to go to Miami.
Everybody wants to go to Miami!
Yeah.
That is every trade rumor from now until fucking Judgment Day.
Well,
it doesn't mean it's going to happen, and two, it's like there are other teams, you guys. The Miami Heat, I'm sorry, JC, are not going to be the only team that wins championships for the next decade. This is not going to happen.
I'm aware.
If they keep picking up players, they might.
No, it's not going to, like, if you really sincerely think that Greg Oden is going to be a difference maker in the playoffs, I direct your attention to the last several years where he has been absent from the NBA. It's just, he's not going to be the difference maker that Miami thinks he is. And what I'm trying to get at there is that their ability to pick up players is not quite as adept as some people think. It's like Ray Allen probably was the last significantly great pickup for them.
The Pacers sound to me like Ocean's 11. It's like, we need another guy.
We need one more.
And they keep on picking up these really great, these bit players, because you know what? Ocean's 11 isn't stacked with all George Clooney's. You got a Casey Affleck in there. You got a Bernie Mac who's still coming up at that time. So they're building it. Eventually, they will beat the house and they'll beat the Heat.
So,
like an air conditioner.
Out of all the rumors, though, of people joining the Heat this year, and the reason why Danny Granger could happen is because, I mean, there are rumors that he was really pissed about being traded from the Pacers because nobody saw that coming. And so what better way to...
Danny Granger's stats should have seen that coming.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what better way to take revenge on the team that traded you than to go with the team that you're probably going to face in the Eastern Conference
Finals? That sounds like the plot of a movie. Let me propose you a different plot, however. It's a little film called Little Giants.
Oh, good Lord.
Oh, yes. Where it's not about the one-star player in Spike. That's what the Heat are about. They want the big names. They want all the all-stars. They want to go out to everybody else's team. They want to be the New York Yankees of basketball, which used to be the Lakers, but now is definitely the Heat. That's what they're all about. The Indiana Pacers, they want the guys who are team players, the guys who will make contributions. But when they put that team together, they weren't looking to get all-stars. They weren't looking to have the most impressive roster in basketball. They were looking for the guys that could play as a unit, and that's exactly what they got. And that is every bit why they've had so much success this season and, you know, success last season. So I think that the ultimate movie here is going to be when the Heat and the Pacers play each other, and the Heat have picked up 12 other All-Stars that they think is going to guarantee them a third win, and the Pacers beat them. That is the underdog story that I'm looking forward to.
So you're fully expecting Paul George to come out dressed as a cheerleader?
Yes. No, I'm expecting them to pull a cheerleader off the bench and have her start at point guard and her kick LeBron's ass. That's what I'm expecting.
Well, he has a very vulnerable nose.
That's
You know, we may talk about LeBron, but I look at past performance, and the Heat tend to beat like a team that's built as a team, like just because of LeBron. Like, he has that amount of talent.
Yeah, I mean, they're built for the playoffs, and now is the time in which you watch them. They went on that 27-game winning streak last year after the Super Bowl, and we're now in post-Super Bowl time this season, and now they've won 8 of their last 9 games.
Yeah, it's the same as 27. I can see how you got there.
Well, at this point, they're at 39-14, which is the exact same as the last 4 years. So they're on track.
Yeah, but again, the playoffs are the ultimate deciding factor.
That's true.
If all anyone cared about was regular season, then Peyton Manning would be unquestionably the best football player who has ever played the game. But there are always going to be detractors that point out, well, the Super Bowl and the playoffs. That's why I want the Pacers to win, just so that this damn conversation can stop. Hey, speaking of ending conversations, the Olympics are over, and like the end of any game of Agricola, it's time to count up the gold. I don't know if I should be graduating or burying somebody right now.
Well, you're in Russia, you do both.
You do. In Soviet Russia, state bury you.
That was like the Olympics of the kazoo.
So. Yes, it was.
Venezuela.
Yeah, and you all came in nothing. So, JC, update us on who has the most gold medals.
So the Winter Olympics, which were held in Russia, are over now, and the country that got the most medals was Russia.
That's surprise, awfully surprise. Fucking convenient.
It is. They finished with 33 medals ahead of 28, which is second, which was us, the U.S.
Woo!
Russia had the most golds, the most silvers. They did not have the most bronze. We had the most bronze. Yeah.
We're number 3, motherfuckers.
Less than third.
Yep.
Small victories.
Yeah. But overall,
we are a nation built on small victories.
First.
Overall, we were fourth in the medal count behind Canada. So let's move on.
Canada.
How did the Cayman Islands come in? How did Dal Travers do?
I don't know. I'm pretty sure Mexico didn't place either because Mexico has one skier that they send every.
I tell you, the great thing about Canada is
where does he practice?
Wait a minute. Silence. The great thing about Canada is
they can beat us in both hockeys, but they're so nice I can't even get mad. It's like I feel like Vince Vaughn in Anchorman. He's like, I hate you with all of my guts. But goddammit, do I respect you.
This is the most animosity toward Canada anyone has ever heard anywhere. Even as we were losing to them in hockey, and like, men's and women's, it's like, well, they're Canada. Fine.
They're the Flanders of countries.
Yeah, they are the Flanders of countries.
The other important thing about the Winter Olympics being over is now the saga of Nightmare Bear is over.
Thank God.
Yeah. Nightmare Bear was terrifying.
Now my shows can come back on, damn it.
That's true. I haven't seen a new episode of New Girl in like 3 weeks. Yeah. It's pissing me off.
Let's see what else was put on hold. Brooklyn Nine-Nine was put on hold.
There was a new Goldberg.
Archer was put on fucking hold.
Is fuck a bunch of that.
Bones.
I think there's a new Archer playing right now as we're recording this.
Like Parks and Rec.
So I'm going to just put the mic down.
Yeah. Sorry.
I got a jet.
Because what the shit inside the locker?
What the shit, Woodhouse?
Well, congratulations, Russia, on cheating your way to the most gold medals, and I didn't say that because I can't back it up. Anyway, the last story we're going to talk about before we get into the tournament is the epic showdown of Clowney versus Manziel, which sounds like a circus duel. But Clowney versus Manziel, who will win the coveted opportunity to play for the Houston Texans?
I mean, based on the combine results, probably Jadeveon Clowney. He's a fucking beast.
Did you see that 4.4 time?
The measurements on Jadeveon Clowney is he's 6'5", 266 pounds, ran a 4.47 40.
That's like Quicksilver and the Juggernaut are the same person.
Yeah. Johnny Manziel, at his diminutive size, ran a 4.56.
Well, good for Frodo.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Jadeveon Clowney didn't do well the entire time. He didn't put up very many bench presses in that drill. He put up 17, which is
Low for a lineman.
He put up 21 actually.
He probably did well in the tip drill. Tip drill, rap song. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
about promiscuous sex, whole thing.
Don't worry, I'll cut it out. It's fine.
He also had a 37. Clowney also had a 37.5-inch vertical leap. Johnny Manziel had a 31.
Wow.
The other significant note about the combine: people were curious how Michael Sam was going to do, and I mean, it's a little sad to say he didn't do very well. Which is really going to hurt him. He ran a 4.91 in the 40. He put up 17 reps in the bench press, which is tied for last. 25-inch vertical leap, which is I'm pretty sure I have a 25-inch vertical leap now. I used to have a 32-inch vertical leap.
I mean, not to open up a can of worms, but...
Let's just throw that in.
It's a very difficult...
Yeah. No big deal.
Yeah, way to brag about that.
I used to do a lot. Then I'd have to back up.
You know, I don't want to get into a whole debate here, but I mean, it's a very tricky situation, because on the one hand, there is sort of... It's funny how the media has kind of turned on... Or some of the sports media has turned on Michael Sam and is now claiming that teams are only interested in him because he's gay, which I find fucking laughable. It's like, what? Yeah, because that's what the NFL is really all about, is we want the gay player. So I'm, and in fact, Jay Moore, I don't like to call the guy out a lot because I do like his show. But he said something today that just I found so offensive, which was that he was convinced that the media was so obsessed, the sports media was so obsessed with Michael Sam because a lot of the writers who write about him are also secretly gay. And to me, that's on par with, you know, go back to the 1950s and somebody writing an article about why there should be civil rights and being called an N-word lover.
Yeah, that's
like,
exactly
to me, that's the
mind.
Exact same scenario. And as long as people have that belief, as long as people make jokes like that, and he, you know, he said it so much that it was like, you think you're joking, but you're putting this forth as your actual theory. In fact, saying that they need to come out of the closet. I'm like, this is really, like, morally reprehensible what you're saying. However, the idea that the media... Like, let's go down that road for a while. Let's play devil's advocate and say that, yes, the NFL is only interested in Michael Sam because he's gay. You can... I mean... So if that's the case, then we have something of a bias that's unfair there, because he should be judged based on his abilities. He should be judged based on things like the combine, where they quantify an athlete's abilities. But at the same time, everybody knows that the combine is not the sole predictor of how an athlete is going to do. And there have been plenty of athletes that teams have taken despite putting up low numbers in this category or that category. So I feel like there are going to be teams that never wanted Michael Sam because he's gay. And those teams are going to get a free pass by saying, we're not taking him because of these numbers, because of that number. And then in the third round, they'll take somebody with worse numbers.
Yeah.
However, we also can't definitively say now why or why not, you know, why they're taking Michael Sam, why they're not taking Michael Sam.
Right.
If he had put up ridiculous numbers in the combine and teams have been passing on him, it'd be pretty clear. Mm-hmm. But I feel like this issue has been, you know, irrevocably clouded now by his mediocre performance in the combine.
See, my thing is, how do you watch the movie 42 and say, you know what? I want to be Wash from Firefly.
I want to be Alan Tudyk. Yeah.
Just like that man was a cartoon racist. He was like Yosemite Sam. I expected like a beard to start growing.
Yeah.
But no, I think he'll be fine. He'll get picked up by a team. But here's the thing. An average NFL career is pretty short.
Yeah.
So he probably only has about 3 years in there, because if you're not a star or a consistent starter, you're bounced out of there pretty quick. Because there's always some new people coming in. But he'll probably get picked up, but there probably will be probably at least a plurality of teams that will pass him because he's gay. Yep. And that's their loss.
But then again, all we ever wanted for this guy was for him to be judged as a player and not for his beliefs off the field.
Yeah.
And I feel like there are now teams that, even though they wouldn't have taken him at all, have a free pass to not take him because they are, quote-unquote, judging him as a player. And there are teams that are going to legitimately just judge him as a player and say, your stats aren't very good, and that's fine. But that's what I'm saying is we'll never know for sure anymore why teams are or are not taking him.
Do you think it was a mistake that he came out in the way that he did before he got picked up by anybody?
Probably not. I mean, because he made it public with his Missouri teammates.
From what I understand, it's the sort of thing he wanted to control the narrative. He had come out to his team a year ago at the Senior Bowl. There was already whispers starting to come out. It would have gotten out eventually.
That's the other thing too. Is people are like, you know, he's going to cause a distraction, which is fucking laughable to me, and that he just wants attention. And I'm like, no, because if he hadn't come out, there would have been reporters for weeks like, is Michael Sam gay? Blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah. So controlling the narrative, I absolutely 100% get that. And Damon Lindelof, that's something else you should you should try to do is control your fucking narratives. But anyway.
Well, I tell you, just one thing before we move on. If Jay Moore's talking about they're only looking at him because he's gay, has he not noticed that, and maybe this is going to invite some comments, but from my perspective, if you're white and really and decent at a position – you will get endorsements. Like, every season, there's one white player who's just, he's good. He's not as good as, like, he's not the best one in the league, but he'll be on the Pizza Hut commercials. He'll be on the Budweiser commercials. Like, Tebow. If Tebow was a black quarterback, nobody would give a shit about Tebow. But now we're just like, okay, it's just all American.
I am going to remind you, nobody gives a shit about Tebow.
There's a good segment of the
point. I think that's his argument. Yeah, is that nobody gives a shit about Tebow, and yet Tebow gets endorsements.
That's true.
So, I mean, we're talking about, like, unfair solicitation. The out-group is less likely to get those considerations.
I understand what you're saying. I don't necessarily 100% agree with it, but I understand what you're saying. But Jay Moore's point was more that the media was overly obsessed with the fact that he was gay. Because the media is gay. And I'm like, that take sports out of this entirely. Take Michael Sam out of this entirely. Yeah. That is a really hurtful and damaging thing to say. That is something that sets us back 20 years. Technically,
isn't he part of the media as well?
Well, that's the other cute thing he does a lot of the time, which is like, the rest of the sports media says this, and I'm saying this. And I'm like, in this case, you should have just shut the fuck up.
Yeah, but Jay Moore has always been sort of that dumbass guy who wants to, like, just throw bombs and then...
All I'm trying to say is that less may have been more in this case. And that's going to do it for the news...
Also, Shiner, rest in peace, Harold Ramis.
Oh my God!
Oh, you're right.
Oh, thank. First of all, cool.
Made the so Ghostbusters sad. Joke.
Wait, cool.
Cool. No, I was gonna
Cut
say
that
soon,
shit
man.
Out.
Too soon.
I was gonna say cool that we can't start the tournament, but anyway, now we further can't start it. I want to talk a little bit about Harold Ramis because he did unfortunately pass away today. The thing about Harold Ramis that I don't feel enough people are taking into account is that there are a lot of movies that people don't remember that he's associated with. A lot of people don't know he directed Multiplicity. A lot of people don't know that he directed National Lampoon Vacation. A lot of people don't know that he wrote Ghostbusters, that he wasn't just in the film. The thing about Harold Ramis is that you look at the movies that he wrote, you look at the movies that he directed, he is responsible for as much of the defining qualities of 80s comedies as is John Hughes. Mm-hmm. John Hughes and Harold Ramis are the two people responsible for making 80s comedies, 80s comedies. And we've lost an icon. I mean, I don't know how else to describe him. Mm-hmm. He is an absolute icon. And I was actually kind of, it really shook me up. Like I did not expect to be as wounded by the news that a celebrity had passed. But when you start thinking about the movies that he's, you know, in some way responsible for, Meatballs, Groundhog Day, Ghostbusters, Animal House, like all of these films, Caddyshack. He fucking directed Caddyshack, people. Mm-hmm. If nothing else in the whole wide spectrum of his accomplishments, he is the muse that gave us Bill Murray. He was Bill Murray's muse. If it weren't for Harold Ramis, we would not have Bill Murray. We would have the Bill Murray that we know.
Or Chevy Chase.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And those are the two guys when you're like, Who are the two leading men of 80s comedies who probably mean the most to that genre? Bill Murray, Chevy Chase.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those people rose to prominence on the shoulders of Harold Ramis, and he will be truly missed. Is that good enough for you? Can we start the fucking tournament now?
I was going to say, people are going to clown on you and me, because I love Multiplicity 2, for loving Multiplicity. Like, challenge yourself and watch it. It's awesome.
It is. It's so sweet.
Yeah.
It is a really, really sweet movie. I will defend that movie until the day I die, but first, it's time for a tournament! Yes. Test your might.
Same time.
It's tournament time. Okay. What time is it? Game time. Die Hard ripoffs. You know them. You love them. You may have watched a couple. We are here tonight to determine which film is the best at not being quite as good as Die Hard.
And podcast, have a couple of laughs. It'll be fun.
We'll get together. We'll make fun of Die Hard ripoffs. Have a few laughs. So for this tournament, we're going to change things up a bit. Elliot has opted to take the position.
Yeah.
Of judge. So Judge Elliot is now presiding over this court, and Jeremy K. Kirk, for showing .net's Jeremy K. Kirk, is going to be the other pundit in this battle, and he has been assigned 4 movies. JC, before we get started, we had a vote. We had a contest, basically an NIT situation. Okay. We had that 16th spot. That last spot in the tournament was open. We had 4 films that could have possibly, contenders, hopefuls, that could have possibly earned that spot, and by an overwhelming majority, the winner was The Rock. So The Rock, Michael Bay's The Rock, is going to be the 16th film.
The movies that you put up against The Rock, it almost seemed like a jobber match in WWE.
Not true. Not true.
Three guys that you'd never heard of versus John Cena.
The point that I did not get a chance to make, and I actually think I mentioned it in the comment section, is I thought it was a fair fight because I still don't believe that The Rock is a diehard ripoff. I don't believe it qualifies. Now, that being said, I am at the mercy of our readers, of our listeners, so I wanted to put it out there to be democratic. But it wasn't a situation where I was setting The Rock up to be the movie. I actually really, really wanted it to be Skyscraper.
Yeah.
Because I think that movie is gold in so many ways and a turd in so many others. But I put The Rock on there because I was basically like, I know that there are people who consider this a diehard ripoff. I know it's a very popular film, a very popular action film. So I will put it out there and I will let the people decide. And they picked the wrong movie. That's fine. Whatever. Not a big deal.
Well, they picked their favorite. I don't think they picked the best, quote unquote, diehard ripoff. Yeah.
To me, it just sounds like The Rock went home and fucked the prom queen.
The Rock may have gone home and fucked the prom queen. But now,
which was Skyscraper.
We have our 16 movies.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, sure.
So they're a necrophiliac?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Okay. So we have 16 movies.
For future tournaments, if anyone is wondering the way in which I've devised to rank the movies that we do, is I basically take an average of the IMDb rating, the Rotten Tomato critics rating, and the Rotten Tomato audience rating, and I just kind of average them out, and so, you know, I let science, or math.
Yeah, math is a science, technically.
Yeah.
It's all a bunch of complicated numbers.
I only know that because I failed both math and science as a kid, so... And now math has failed me because The Rock is in the tournament. Anywho, so JC, before we get started, it is Adam, it is Jeremy, it is myself, and it is JC. Tell us who has what movies.
All right, so Adam will be throughout the night defending Passenger 57, The Raid, Cliffhanger, and Under Siege 2.
Sorry, guys, but the odds are stacked in my favor.
Are they?
So we shall see.
Lot of good
I am
movies.
The only one with Catherine Hagel in it.
Brian has Air Force One, No Contest, Command Performance, and Sleepless Night.
I'm sorry, I have a movie called No Contest in my lineup.
Yeah.
Y'all got no chance. It's No Contest.
I have Toy Soldiers, Sudden Death, Speed, and Olympus Has Fallen.
All right.
And pretty Jeremy strong. Has Star Trek First Contact, Under Siege, Speed 2, and The Rock.
All right.
I don't even know why we're having a contest.
And just to the listeners, I've only seen 7 of those movies.
That's actually the thing. That's why I wanted Elliot to be the judge for this one. Is I'm like, you are going to be entirely impartial.
You're going to learn a lot about some really cool movies. I showed Toy Soldiers to Brian yesterday.
Yes, it's quite
cool. Oh, you've never seen it?
No, and despite Sean Astin's Linda Hamilton haircut, it is a really great movie.
Linda, don't give away my points.
Always good to see Andrew Devoff show up.
I'm sorry, am I stepping on your jokes that I made while we were watching it? Now you've stolen for your argument.
so that's what all podcasters do?
I only stole like one.
As long as it was the good one, that's fine.
De Leon sends his regards.
No shit.
Wait, is Will Wheaton in for Star Trek First Contact?
Will Wheaton? Oh.
No, he's not.
No, he's
in. I thought he was going to say Totally Soldiers.
He was already with the Traveler. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Nobody knows what that means.
Oh, that's true.
What does that
mean? I don't know. It just kind of blew my mind for a second. They were going to be talking about Die Hard ripoffs, and the one thing that was going to be common amongst more than one movie was going to be Will Wheaton.
Will Wheaton.
Will Wheaton.
Why are you saying it like that?
What? I'm only saying Will Wheaton. Anyway, who's on first?
There's an H in his first name, is there?
All right.
And dear listeners, as a note, and Brian can cut this out later if he doesn't want you to know. As a note of how serious we take this, 3 out of 4 contestants, our attorneys tonight, have prepared arguments. Like, written arguments.
I like that we're being called attorneys now, because we weren't hated enough.
That is a term of endearment.
So. No, I'm not even saying that you're a hated person. I'm saying that members of your profession have been the butt of several hated jokes.
Yes.
So for those of you who are just joining us for your first of the Inside the Locker, totally accurate, desperately important movie elimination tournaments, this is how it works. We have a field, in this case, of 16 films, and it's set up in a March Madness-style bracket. These films are going to go head-to-head, and we're basically going to put them on trial in the court of public opinion, where, in this case, Elliot will be the judge. Now, I know what you're thinking. That's a weird overlap. Sports and the justice system? Those two things never cross streams. Well, we're going to go ahead and forego the fact that there is never at all any correlation between athletes and the justice system, and we're going to combine those two metaphors. So, yes, we basically are whittling these movies down to a grand champion, and much like the actual NCAA tournament, the better team on paper is not necessarily the better team. The better movie on paper is not necessarily the movie that will advance, because it is all about the strength of the play, and specifically playing to the judge. So, yeah, let's go ahead and get this started.
Round one. Fight!
And who is up first, JC?
We have Sleepless Night versus The Rock.
That's me versus Adam.
Tell me.
That's me versus...
That is you versus me, Brian.
Yep.
Yes, that's what I said. Yes. So, we've got our timekeeper, yes, ready to go.
I am ready.
Judge Elliot is ready to hear opening remarks from Jeremy K. Kirk.
All right. Guys, let's talk about Michael Bay. He has made some of the biggest, baddest, awesomest action movies of all time. And The Rock is the second movie he made right after Bad Boys, and immediately he just made just... an epic extravaganza of an action movie. Did it set out to be a Die Hard ripoff? I don't believe so. But putting a Die Hard-like story set it in Alcatraz, that's something that's never been done before. And it's not even anything you can do again without being a clear ripoff of The Rock. They have the outside, just like any good Die Hard ripoff, they have the outside authority being completely ineffective. Sean Connery basically playing James Bond 20 years later, kicking ass. Nicolas Cage is awesome. It's a great action movie.
All right. And it is time once again for me to step up to the plate and defend truth and righteousness. All right.
Is he ready?
Yep.
And go.
So I'm going to point out the various ways, and there are several sundry ways in which The Rock is not actually a Die Hard ripoff. Instead, I'm going to let the strength of Sleepless Night carry it to the next round. One of the things that we love about John McClane is his endurance. That guy is an unstoppable machine. When the chips are down, when you need somebody to really step up, not only is he going to step up, but he is going to fight every step of the way, literally every step, every broken glass-laden step of the way. And that endurance is present in the hero from the French film Sleepless Night, who is fighting literally through one night of gangsters, of fights, of drunken bar patrons, of corrupt cops. Everything is going wrong for this guy, but he endures. Plus, this is a film that proves America does not have the monopoly on ripping off American movies.
Burp.
Word. Jeremy Kirk, would you like a rebuttal? That is something you can ask for.
I'm fine, thank you.
Okay, so it's all you, Elliot.
Okay, well, amongst the two arguments of, you know, which one was the most like it, I gotta say that I'm gonna give it to Sleepless Night.
All right.
Not because I actually think that The Rock is somewhat analogous to a Die Hard ripoff. But the idea of, you know, the thing about John McClane that we all remember is he just goes through hell. Like, he's walking bloody through the entire thing, and that sort of related more to then, because one of your big arguments for why it was a Die Hard ripoff was that there's ineffectual police outside. But if you watch The Rock, there were parts where they at least tried to do some stuff. It wasn't effective as it could have been, but they're the ones who sent in them in the first place. The Die Hard is where the guy was there through happenstance. So that's why we give it Sleepless Night.
All right, well, I've done my job and put The Rock out of this damn tournament.
Are you happy now?
I am happy.
Good,
I'm very happy.
Good. I bombed that for you.
I actually did not prepare an argument for that film's next opponent. I just wanted to make sure it beat The Rock. That's all I care about in the whole world. Anyway, JC, who's up next?
Under Siege versus Olympus Has Fallen.
Under Siege
versus... Under Siege 2, sorry.
Under Siege 2. Under Siege 2. Ooh. Dark Territory.
From the sequel first.
Versus Olympus Has Fallen. Jeremy Kirk taking Under
no,
Siege.
No, no.
Adam again.
I got Under Siege 2.
I never know who's doing what. I even ask you at the beginning of the show who's doing what, and I never can remember.
It's okay, I got it right in front of me.
Well, then you fucking tell us who's going against who.
I told you the movies.
Yes.
Well, JC,
which is
okay. Under
they
Siege
know
two.
Who they are.
Well, JC, I guess you got to take control.
You got to take control. It's too hot to handle, too cold to hold.
Under Siege 2, which is Adam versus Olympus Has Fallen, which is me.
I want you to do that every single time. I want you to do what you just did every single time.
Yes, okay. You have sort of a De Niro look going on.
Well,
you
do what you just did every single time. We're going to hear things anyway. Who's first?
Adam, go first.
Right. Go first. I'm gonna go first.
1 minute on the clock, Adam.
So one of the things that I do love about Die Hard is the Hans Gruber character. So you've got a villain who is both a physical presence and also brings in that sort of mental intimidation factor as well. I think any movie that's going to rip off Die Hard pretty much has to meet that. And when a movie can't meet that, it does what Under Siege 2 does. And it splits them into two totally separate people. So Under Siege 2 takes that the mental part of the character and puts him into basically a very deep voice sounding Mark Zuckerberg. Like, he's a guy who's just going to run shit with the computers and leave his henchmen to do all the physical acts that he basically can't do. Anytime anybody tries to match up against Steven Seagal, you have to do what they do for this movie. You have to take somebody who has played a werewolf for Stephen King to match up against Steven Seagal. And that's exactly what Under Siege 2 does.
Okay, 8 seconds left.
I'm done.
Okay.
And he drops the mic and walks away. So that is Adam for Under Siege.
I got a timer here.
Okay.
Yeah.
JC is going to be his own timekeeper.
Wait, what?
Apparently.
Well, no, he can do it. He just doesn't have to show it to me. Okay. Yeah.
And go.
Okay. So, last year there were two Die Hard ripoffs in the White House, Olympus Has Fallen and White House Down. Of the two films, my personal preference is Olympus Has Fallen. I think it's the more fun version of the two because when you compare the violence in the two movies, the violence does not fuck around in Olympus Has Fallen. It's got a body count of 168, blood all over the place, F-bombs all over the place. It has a personality that White House Down doesn't. Being an R-rated film, it has the sort of violent personality that Die Hard does, which I think makes it stand out above the rest. It's got a hero who's just as badass as John McClane. Gerard Butler runs into the burning building, essentially, and wipes out almost all of the Korean army. Robert Forster is in this, so he's got a great cast besides Gerard Butler. Aaron Eckhart is the president. Just great action and fun all around. It's one of the more fun movies you'll see.
Okay. My decision is I'm going to go with Olympus Has Fallen, despite JC spending 30 seconds talking about how it was better than White House's.
He was debating it against a movie he wasn't supposed to be debating it against.
Still had a better point.
Well, I mean, yeah, it was about the personality of the movie and why.
That's what I took it for.
More why Olympus Has Fallen is more like Die Hard than White House.
Hey, your argument was dirty, but it had personality.
That's what it was.
I'm glad I didn't really have to come down to you just pointing a rebuttal back at me saying your movie stars Katherine Hagel. And then just qualifying it completely.
So Katherine Hagel was in Under Siege 2?
Yes. Yes.
She's Seagal's daughter.
Niece.
Who cares?
I really don't want to correct you.
Oh my god, I threw him in my mouth a little bit.
Well, there you go.
Eric Bogosian was the villain you didn't mention.
I did.
Oh, did you?
He plays the Mark Zuckerberg.
Oh, that's the Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah.
Oh,
so in that one, I don't remember. He's still a cook, but now it's on a train.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's the Dr. Seuss. He's the Dr. Seuss of John McClane here. Is he, would you, could you on a boat? Would you, could you?
But does he have a ghost dog following him around now?
No, he does not.
No, he's got a Morse chestnut.
Who the fuck is Morse chestnut?
He is every black actor in every white movie ever made.
He is the clean looking, unthreatening one, yes.
What's up next here, JC?
Next is The Raid, which is Adam. Versus No Contest.
Oh, come on! You put the raid...
Okay, here's what I'm going to do.
Hey, I let science determine it.
Here's what I'm going to do. Here's what I'm going to do. Because I actually do have a bias towards The Raid, I'm going to shorten whoever's... I don't know who's arguing this. Whoever is arguing The Raid, I'm going to shorten your time to 45 seconds.
Okay.
Wow, okay.
Boom.
Elliot just doesn't give a shit. He's going to change his mind.
Wait, he's just going to do whatever
he wants. Judges shit all the time. Okay, well, here's the thing. I find it very ironic that you've put a movie called No Contest against The Raid. Anyway.
Science did that.
Science did not do that. You did this. You did this, JC. You did this to me. Anyway, so Adam, do you want to go first or second?
No, I got 45 seconds. You go first.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm ready.
And go.
So not all ripoffs are created equal. I think that's pretty clear at this point. But you cannot argue with the ambition of No Contest. No Contest is diehard at a beauty pageant starring former porn star Shannon Tweed and Andrew Dice Clay as Hans Gruber. Now you tell me there aren't big swinging brass balls in that casting. I want a former porn star versus the most offensive stand-up comic this side of Michael Richards. Does it all work? Fuck no, it doesn't all work. But if we're taking John McClane as our paradigm here of action heroes, not all his makeshift schemes worked either. Remember when he tied himself to a hose and almost got dragged out of the window? Remember when he ran across broken glass and had to pick them out? It's about adapting. It's about sometimes you don't have the best odds, but you do what you can with it. So to that I say, yippee-ki-yay, mother of invention.
Anything else?
No, that's all.
I don't know why you show me his time. Okay, do I win his second?
I was going to stare you down for the last 5 seconds.
I'll give you 5 more seconds off of his time. 50 seconds. On the board.
So Adam has a total of 50 seconds according to the rules that Elliot is just making up.
Hey, he doesn't do this shit all the time.
It's like Russia and the Olympics. We're just making up these rules as we go along.
That benefit you.
That benefit me. Yeah.
All right, so you want to talk about ambition. Take a movie who takes all of the action elements of all the Die Hard sequels and packs that shit into 90 minutes. There is an unrelenting amount of action in this one movie that completely blows every single movie in this tournament out of the water. You're talking nonstop, 90 minutes straight. Not only that, of all the films, and I'll argue this till the end, till as long as this movie lasts, this has probably the most sympathetic lead character from the entire series. But this entire tournament. He's a character who you establish within the first 2 minutes because it needs another 89 minutes to fill in all the action that we just talked about. In 2 minutes, you learn that he is both a family man, he has a kid on the way, and he devotes time. The first... Oh, son of a bitch!
I would like a rebuttal. I would like... Even despite the fact that Adam didn't get all of his arguments out, I feel like I'm in danger here, so I want a rebuttal.
I'm going to give you 9 seconds that he didn't use.
All right. This is the only No Contest is the only Die Hard ripoff that actually stars somebody from Die Hard, and that's Robert Davi, who played one of the Johnsons in Die Hard. So it may not have a big shot against The Raid, but there you go.
Okay, you want another?
Are you sure you're not a real lawyer?
I'm not a real lawyer. I just play one in this podcast.
All I can rebut is this movie stars Andrew Dice Clay, and it should not be going on.
You know, the rebuttals were useful this time. I was going to give it to The Raid, then I was going to give it to No Contest, but he just messed what I thought. Like, why the fuck is Andrew Dice Clay in a Die Hard ripoff?
That's fine. I gave the No Contest the best possible
fight. You almost
won
until he said it again, so it's The Raid.
Adam, I would have said, Hickory Dickory Dock, fuck this stupid movie. It doesn't belong in the...
I just couldn't get past the Andrew Dice Clay. Like...
Fuck you, JC. What's next?
Oh!
Oh! Oh! What's next?
The Raid one. Next is Under Siege, Jeremy versus Sudden Death, me.
Nice.
Ooh. Yeah.
All right, first of all, if you don't get Jeremy Sudden Death, excited. Listen to me, JC. If you don't get Sudden Death to the next round, man, you are disowned.
If you don't get Steven Seagal into the next round, your still name is Jeremy.
But you're not worthy of the name Kirk.
Inspired by what Adam just said, could I have another beer, please? Thank you very much. Okay, so who's going first here?
Jeremy seems to be excited.
I'll go first.
So, yeah.
All right. First.
And go.
Look, I don't even know why we're having a contest. Under Siege is clearly the best ripoff, the best Die Hard ripoff of all time. First off, it came out in 92, which makes it, of the movies we're talking about tonight, beside Toy Soldiers, which really, we don't count that, it's the earliest of any of these movies. It has all of the classic Die Hard tropes, a hero that's caught up in something that he didn't bring on himself, a group of terrorists that take over a secluded area, the outside law enforcement that is really inefficient. Steven Seagal, yes, it's clearly the best Steven Seagal action movie of all time, a man that hardly ever gets hurt. For the Die Hard ripoff, he even said, yeah, I'll take a nick over the eye. That's what he did for that movie. Tommy Lee Jones, greatest villain of any movie, of all the movies we're talking about tonight. He is as like a 70s rocker, former CIA assassin.
And you're done.
He's amazing.
JC.
Okay. Let me know.
Go.
So, of all of the movies in this tournament, this is going to be the only one where our hero is responsible for saving the lives of not a few dozen people or not a couple hundred people, around 15 to 20,000 people. He has to save the lives of all those people. This was conceived as a Die Hard ripoff on purpose. It was originally conceived as a comedy, but then they realized, we have JCVD, and he's actually pretty badass, so we're just going to go straightforward, legit with this and make it an awesome movie. It's directed by Peter Hyams, who has a really great filmography. He's directed, it's kind of varied, he's directed Time Cop. He's also directed Stay Tuned, which is a good movie, but not an action movie. He's directed The Relic and End of Days. So he's got a good filmography underneath him. There's a really awesome fight with a 7-foot penguin mascot. There's a kid here who follows directions really well. No kid in any of these movies will follow directions as well as the kid in this movie. That's it.
I would like to take a rebuttal.
Oh, shit. Okay. Jeremy Kirk with a rebuttal.
And I'll give you 10 seconds for the rebuttal.
Just really quick, Under Siege was nominated for 2 Academy Awards, sound and sound editing. 2 Academy Awards that Die Hard was also nominated for. Just saying.
But we've already figured out that just means most sound.
I'm glad.
The sudden death clearly didn't have.
Okay. Well, with the most effective arguments directly for why it was a Die Hard ripoff, I got to give it to Kirk with Under Siege.
You are disowned, Jason. You are disowned. It was conceived as a comedy. How is that not amazing? Anyway, and you're right. You are absolutely right. Kids in movies piss me off because I can't follow basic instructions.
Yeah. But were there kids movie, in Die Hard?
If we're okay with spoiling it, so in this movie, Jean-Claude Van Damme tells his son, don't move from the sea. I don't care if the building is falling down around you. And then the building starts falling.
I don't care if the building is falling down around you. Do not move from the seat.
And then the building starts falling down around him, and he stays in
the
seat.
The whole time.
He's a stupid kid, but at least he follows instructions. I don't know where that accent got away from me.
It's like Daniel LaRusso.
He is like...
Really, he is. We should say, since this is the last time we're talking about sudden death tonight, Powers Booth is an awesome villain.
He really is. When you said Tommy Lee Jones is the best villain, I was like, ooh, Powers Booth.
It's close.
Actually. It's close. All right. Yeah, but that Powers Booth, though. So who's up next, JC?
Okay, so last week I was trying to go in order just to kind of maintain it, but to kind of give people a breather. I'm mixing it around, but I'm keeping track. So we've got Cliffhanger, which is Adam, versus Command Performance, which is Brian. And that's a 2 versus a 3. If we were going in order, it would be me and Jeremy again. But.
How the fuck did Command Performance get a 3 spot? That's insane to me. Like, I'm arguing for the movie, and I think that's retarded. Anyway.
Science.
Wait, what were the movies that got a 4 spot? I'm just curious.
Be Speed 2, Passenger 57, No Contest, and, I mean, technically The Rock, but that was the play-in, so.
It was a vote-in.
It wouldn't have been a 4.
Gotcha. It was a vote-in. Anyway, Adam, you want to go first or second?
I'll go second.
All right.
And go.
Elliot, are you familiar with the work of a man named Dolph Lundgren? You may know that he is one of the icons of 80s action. He is, in fact, far more of an icon of 80s action than Bruce Willis will ever be. Bruce Willis came from a background of being on a sitcom to jumping into action, one of the greatest action franchises in 1988. The 80s had already passed him by the time he jumped in. Here comes Dolph Lundgren. Now, Dolph Lundgren took his time. He waited until the early 2000s to make his Die Hard ripoff. And we talk about ambition. This one is about a drummer in a band who is at a concert when terrorists come in to kidnap a prime minister's daughter. So not only does he not have the same training as a police officer like John McClane, but he's a towering individual who doesn't give a shit. He's a rock and roller who's like, fuck it, I know what the greater good is, I am going to save this girl, I don't care what the odds are, I am Dolph motherfucking Lundgren, and I have a degree in biochemistry. Which he does.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Adam, it is now on you.
Is me?
It's you.
Is me?
And go.
Okay, so I feel Jeremy talked earlier about the importance of the villain in regards to films like these, and Brian just talked earlier about how much Dolph Lundgren relates to the Bruce Willis character in terms of his prominence in 80s action. Well, I feel like you can combine both of those and actually talk about John Lithgow in terms of being a villain throughout the 80s and fully representing the sociopathic madman mastermind. And that's exactly what you get in Cliffhanger. It meets all the requirements of being a diehard ripoff. It's the right man at the wrong place at the wrong time against insurmountable odds against a group of people he should not be able to overcome if not given the environment that he's in and their lack of knowledge of him actually being there. And that's exactly what this movie does. And it's unrelenting and completely brutal in the exact same way that Die Hard is. Like, it's a rated R film that pulls no punches with who they're ready to kill at any given moment and exactly how it is that they want to go about doing that throughout the entire picture.
Okay. I would like a rebuttal.
Okay.
My rebuttal is this. No, Command Performance is a Die Hard ripoff that takes place in Russia and is better than the actual Die Hard film set in Russia. That is what I have to say about that.
Okay. Everything you said is absolutely true.
Okay, well... Leading the witness.
Well, before the rebuttal, I was going to give it to Cliffhanger, but I don't give points for comparing to a horrible movie, so it's still Cliffhanger.
Was that like leading the witness? Was that close?
That's exactly.
Is that the right law term? Is that correct? Is that correct?
Asked and answered.
I respect your principles, Elliot. Sustained. Even if they're wrong.
So that was Cliffhanger?
Any movie that takes the pains to set it in Chernobyl and then has anti-radiation guns, fuck that movie.
Yeah, not to mention they made every man John McClane, our favorite like blue-collar wonderful hero. They made him like Captain Dickbag. Yeah. They made him the ugliest American possible.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're not...
I think that was Bruce Willis's idea, probably.
Probably.
I was like, I don't understand what you're saying. So I'm going to punch you in the face.
Actually happens in the film.
Like, just really?
Point that out. Yeah.
Yeah. Instead of being Captain America, he was Ultimate Captain America, who is a dickbag.
Captain Jingo.
Yeah,
it's Captain America.
He was Jingo Unchained.
Captain America.
Captain America. Okay.
What's up next?
Next is one of the more fun ones, and how this is lucky it worked out this way. It's Speed, which is me, versus Speed 2.
Alright. Oh, nice! Oh, this is going to be fun!
Wow.
Because I haven't already. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Speed's going down. For the ages. I'm really excited here.
You have to keep 100 words per minute, or you lose the argument.
Yeah, I can't do that.
This is going to be amazing. Alright, who's going first?
We gotta do it in chronological.
Yeah, I was gonna say I'll go first.
Okay.
Yes,
we have.
And go.
Alright, pop quiz hot shots. Which is one of the more iconic action films from the 90s that has witty dialogue, a classic villain, hostages that bond together in their and it even highlights a moment of defeat, which you don't see a lot from our heroes. It's got a classic score by Mark Mancina, which went on to make the scores for Bad Boys, Money Train, Con Air, Training Day. Just one of the best movies all around. I was surprised to see that it was a one seed, extremely high rated on IMDb, so lots of people love it. It's one of the films that gets a bad rap. People kind of make fun of this movie and they think, oh, it's kind of a silly movie. But if you go back and watch it, this movie is really solid. There's a reason why it's rated so high. It made Keanu Reeves a star. This is just one of the best action movies of the 90s.
Okay. All right. And let's go Kirk.
All right. Dennis Hopper never gets on the bus, guys. So Speed is not a diehard ripoff. Speed 2, on the other hand, Willem Dafoe is on that ship the whole time. And Jason Patrick, filling in for Keanu Reeves, who smartly didn't want to do a sequel, Jason Patrick takes over with Sandra Bullock. Once again, heroes who are in the wrong place at the wrong time, and Willem Dafoe takes over a ship. Clearly a much, much better, much, much, not better. I won't say better because Speed 2's, I mean, Speed is a great action movie. There's no denying that. But Speed 2 is a better Die Hard ripoff. The end, the final scene, $25 million to create that scene of a ship crashing into an island. Probably one of the biggest stunts of any movie we're going to be talking about tonight.
Okay, and JC, rebuttal?
Nope.
Please?
I have nothing.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
I got to give it to Speed 2 because Kurt just took your argument apart. The part where he says he doesn't get on the bus. Like,
I've never thought Speed was a Die Hard ripoff.
That
it's a great action movie. I love Speed, but
so in looking up the trivia about this movie, the way the script was originally written, Keanu Reeves actually turned it down because he said it was too much of a Die Hard ripoff, and so they rewrote it.
Well. That was unexpected. Yeah. I did not expect that to happen, but that is the nature of these tournaments.
I'm sorry, Duke Keanu. Goes
down.
So who's up next?
Next is Duke State Star Trek wherever. First Contact, which is Jeremy versus Passenger 57, which is Adam.
I just got to say, Jeremy Kirk just said, Duke goes down to Duke State.
Yeah, basically. That's basically what just happened.
Duke State?
Sure.
Some people call that UNC, but that's fine. Okay.
Oh yeah, that was totally NCC. That was totally
Duke
a four
Community one. College. Just beat Duke.
I love you guys. All right. So
wait,
who?
What did I just? Wait, what are we? What happened?
Oh, I think we're debating, Adam.
Yeah.
Versus
Passenger 57 versus Star Trek: First Contact.
Oh. Okay.
Oh wow. Okay.
Who's going first?
Yeah. Who's going first here?
I guess I will.
Passenger 57.
Okay.
Ice skating uphill. Okay, start.
All right. Well, we've talked a lot about a lot of ripoffs tonight, but you know what? None of them have catchphrases. Die Hard is known, if not for John McClane, if not for Hans Gruber, if not for the entire plotline, it's known for one other thing, and it's very, very important. It's catchphrases. Yippee-ki-yay, welcome to the party, pal. Like, the list goes on and on of quotable quotes from that movie. One other movie has that. And it's the only movie that actually has made its way into the pop culture lexicon, which is you always bet on black.
Damn
that
right.
movie that belongs to Passenger 57 meets, you know, even beyond that, still meets all the requirements. Bad guys on the plane, good guys on the plane, trying to save everybody else. And I mean, that's really all you need to be a Die Hard ripoff.
Okay, 7 seconds.
All right.
Okay, dropping the mic. Okay, go ahead, Kirk.
Well, sometime in the late 90s, after Star Trek Generations came out and was really light on action, someone decided, hey, we need to do the next Star Trek movie and just go all out. So what do? They basically retconned Die Hard and set it on the Enterprise, where the Borg is taking over. Probably one of the most ingenious ideas. I'm not sure if at any point anyone said, hey, we're going to rip off Die Hard and set it on the Enterprise, but that's basically what they did. Captain Picard is quoting Moby Dick, as always, but he's still shooting Borg left and right. There's even a gunfight on the outside of the Enterprise in spacesuits. I can get that out. There's a gunfight in the holodeck in 1920s gangster era type stuff. Just all different kinds of great action and one of the most, probably the most unique location you'll find for a Die Hard ripoff.
You know, I was going to give it to Passenger 57.
Hold on, I'm sorry. I keep forgetting.
I was going to give it to Passenger 57 until you mentioned the quote, and I considered Picard's speech, where he quotes Moby Dick, to be one of the most quotable things in my life in the lexicon, so I'm going to give it to Star Trek because I was going to give it to...
Oh, plagiarism!
What?
Fucking plagiarism!
I got to give it to Star Trek.
Adam objects.
The line must be drawn here!
I almost want to say that Star Trek First Contact, like, broke its ankle and Passenger 57 has to move on.
Yeah, that was... Man,
until you mentioned that, I
would have just talked about Under Siege if I thought that.
This is the other great thing about Elliot as the judge is the complete lack of predictability as to what is going to happen.
Man,
oof,
ouch!
It's the one movie starring a black guy, and I can't get it to
kill us first, right?
Well, Star Trek has Alfie Woodard, and it has Jory LaForge, and it has
Data.
Star is a black guy.
Not the guy driving the ship. Like Picard is Miss Daisy. Anyway,
Geordi doesn't drive the ship.
Adam just threw his notes in there.
Because that was all Passenger 57. That's the only movie that actually thought was actually to get to the next round.
I also wanted to mention I'm the only person that didn't have notes, by the way.
It's true. He did beat you without notes. I know. So, okay. Did we make it through the first round?
Nope, we got one more.
Okay, what's the last
one? Air Force One, which is you versus Toy Soldiers, which is me.
Mm. All right. Do you want to go first or second?
I'll go second.
All right. So that means I go first.
Okay, and Brian, go.
We've talked a lot about how Die Hard is all about the idea of the everyman, about the guy in the wrong place at the wrong time. What's bold about Air Force One is that it is every bit a Die Hard ripoff, except that it takes the chance and makes the hero the president of the goddamn United States. You don't get much less everyman than the leader of the free world, except that then you cast Harrison Ford, because that is the charm of Harrison Ford. That is his superpower, is that he can always be relatable. Whether he is Han Solo dashing about the galaxy and avoiding bounty hunters, whether he's collecting artifacts of significance culturally from the hands of the Nazis, he is always relatable. And in Air Force One is probably his most down-to-earth role, even as he is taking on Gary Oldman as a breakaway Russian terrorist. That is a heavyweight bout not seen since McClane Rickman. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay, and JC, go.
So the cool thing about Toy Soldiers is it's one of these movies that is kind of a mix of really high quality and sort of a mix of really ridiculous elements. It has the most hilariously inept terrorists out of all the movies that we talked about this. They're always a day late and a dollar short. Yet they stick to their plans and they are going to kidnap these kids. This school is a school filled with a lot of the sons of the richest people in the country, one of whom is a mobster. So the terrorists take a shining to him and they strike a kinship with him, sort of a deal with his father. Will Wheaton is in this, and Brian likes saying his name. Sean Astin is in this. This was when Sean Astin could still pass for a badass before he was a hobbit or a diminutive football player. This movie is so violent in 1991 that it was criticized for the amount of violence, even though now it seems kind of tame.
Okay. I would like a rebuttal.
Okay.
I'm not sure how formidable the terrorists can be considered if they can be taken down by Wesley Crusher and Samwise Gamgee. That is all I have to say about that.
Samwise Gamgee's tough, man.
As a child? No. With a mullet?
Linda Hamilton haircut.
Okay, despite the rebuttal, I'm going to have to give it to Air Force One because you can't match up to... The only thing I can think that can match up to Gruber and McClane is Gary Oldman and Harrison Ford.
Hans Gruber! All right, so that is, if I'm not mistaken, the end of round one, which means we have whittled it down to our Elite Eight, and those Elite Eight are...
Sleepless Night, Olympus Has Fallen, The Raid, Under Siege, Speed 2, Cliffhanger, Star Trek First Contact, and Air Force One.
All right.
Wow. We got an Gonzaga
interesting lineup. We do have a Gonzaga in there for sure.
Excuse me.
Round two, fight!
So what is the first matchup of the Elite Eight round?
Since you and I just went, we'll skip that one and go next. Adam and Jeremy. Adam has The Raid. Jeremy's got Under Siege.
Ooh! Yes.
Damn.
This is amazing. Ooh. Okay. This is like Kansas versus a building full of terrorists that one Indonesian cop has to climb his way to the top of like he's playing Bruce Lee's Game of Death.
Jesus Christ.
So it's a lot like sports. In that way.
I don't know which movie I love more. It's like, damn, okay.
Well, then take that element completely out of your decision.
No, I know.
That's a matchup where you've seen both?
Okay. I've seen both of them.
Hold on, I think you need another beer before you start. This is rough.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, you're Kevin Costner's character from 3 Days to Kill now?
Yeah.
You just need vodka to stay balanced as you go through your killing?
I have a feeling that that'll be the last time anyone references 3 Days to Kill on anything.
Ali Frazier, Raid versus Under Siege.
Oh, wait, who's going first? Me?
Okay.
Oh, I was asking, but okay.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
Okay, and go.
Okay. I mean, I really don't think that this is any kind of debate. I mean, if you're just going to talk about quality of movie, if you take Hans Gruber, you cannot really translate that into any other villain, really, that we do have in there. As much as any of us are going to argue it, I mean, Tommy Lee Jones, Gary Busey, fine. They are no match for Hans Gruber. The Raid doesn't even care to even worry itself with that. He just has the bad guy shoot people in the face just to establish the fact that he's in command, and everything else, it just trudges right over that and goes straight to action. Doesn't bullshit around, doesn't fuck around with anything else in between. If you can't do clever dialogue, fine. What can you do? You can punch people in the face, you can throw their faces in the wall, you can do so many things with people's faces. If there's nothing else that this movie teaches you, it is that you can do practically anything to a human face. And that is exactly what The Raid does.
You can use a sword as a sword. Okay, I think you're done.
All the different things you can do to a face.
It's possibly the greatest defense of The Raid I've ever heard. Okay, Kirk. And give me a second. And... okay. And go.
Alright, look, there's no denying that The Raid is not... it's a great action movie, but as a diehard ripoff, as a intentional diehard ripoff, Under Siege is the clear-cut winner. Let's talk about villains. Tommy Lee Jones shows up wearing sunglasses and a bandana and a leather jacket, singing the blues, and then he just shoots a guy in the head. His name is Stranix. Gary Busey is in there as Commander Krill. These are, like, diehard-level caricature names for these villains. And in the meantime, Steven Seagal as the everyman cook who has a mysterious past as a SWAT member, or SEAL team member, I'm sorry. Just one of the great diehard ripoff heroes of all time. And not only is he amazing with knives and ripping people's throats out, just like the people in The Raid, Steven Seagal knows how to do something to somebody's face. He also knows how to create, like, booby trap bombs.
Okay.
Rebuttal? Okay. As an everyman, Steven Seagal is 6'3". That is not an everyman. You know what an everyman is? Somebody less than 5'8", and can still do those exact same things to people's faces.
Can I
whatever? Yeah, re-rebuttal.
Re-rebuttal?
Re-rebuttal.
Okay. Steven Seagal is a cook. That's pretty everyman. And what he does to Tommy Lee Jones, not only his face, but his head, gouges his eye out, stabs him in the head, and then shoves his face through a bunch of monitors. That's a lot of things you do to a face.
Re-re-re-re-rebuttal.
I want to allow it because it's really close right now. Like, I am... like,
wow, we are in, like, triple overtime. Okay, go.
Steven Seagal is not a cook. Steven Seagal is a retired Navy SEAL who chose to stop being that just because he wanted to.
Okay. I just want to say this really doesn't have anything to do with it being a diehard ripoff, but until I was a little bit older and a little bit wiser, I thought Tommy Lee Jones sang Voodoo Child because of Under Siege. That's just okay.
So Jeremy just admitted to being an idiot. So I'm kidding. I'm joshing. 13. You. I'm joshing you.
She was only 13.
She was only 13 years old.
Oh, this is close.
This is Jeremy, tough.
You had boobs that you could have mentioned.
I know the boobs.
I know the boobs. I'm aware of the boobs.
We're good on the boobs.
You're good on the boobs.
There was one thing that I'm going to give this to The Raid.
Hold on.
Yes! And here's the reason.
Jury, disregard boobs!
And here's the reason I'm going to give it to it, because... When,
I'm sorry, wait, hold on. The boobs are inadmissible.
Please have the boobs stricken from the record.
Sorry, Elliot. Please continue.
I'm going to give it to The Raid because it was a very, very close argument, but when a person brings up an argument and the other person doesn't directly rebut it, it's seated. And you seated that the villains...
A lawyer?
That the villains in Die Hard were not matched by anybody. So I'm just saying.
I should have actually said that Adam even mentioned earlier that Under Siege should win this whole thing. So that should have been.
Yeah, that would have helped.
That would have helped. Yeah.
That would have been much better.
It was.
Why didn't
honestly,
you say
no? I had.
That would have been much better.
If you had pulled out. If you had whipped out the tits, I had no rebuttal for that.
Yeah. Oh, you would have won if you mentioned that, honestly. Those are the first pair
of... I thought it was such a foregone conclusion that Under Siege was going on again.
Those are the first pair of boobs I've ever saw in my life. If you had mentioned those, you would have won.
Look, for the first time in my life, I shouldn't have held on to
boobs. I really thought that was going to be your closing argument, which is Die Hard plus tits.
The bottom line here is that Jeremy should have whipped out his tits.
Yes.
Or if you're listening to portions of this podcast, that is what you will hear. Yeah. Anywho, that was that was the big game. That was the most exciting one to watch. That went to triple overtime. That was incredible. Well done. And look at the sportsmanship. Hold on. Gotta love that.
That's what you like to see. Classic.
Gotta love it. What's up next?
So next we got Sleepless Night, which is you, and Fuck. Olympus Has Fallen, which is me.
Fuck! All right. Fuck it. We'll do it live.
Okay, who's going first?
I went first last time.
Yeah, I was going to say I'll go first.
Okay, JC, and you ready?
Yes. So, Olympus Has Fallen was so confident that it would forever stand the test of time, it threw in a Breaking Bad reference in the opening scene, so that way it would forever be dated. That's confidence. It's going to have a sequel coming out soon, which is called London Has Fallen. We don't know anything about it other than the name, but that promises to be pretty epic. I talked earlier about how the violence doesn't fuck around. We seem to like the idea of things being done to people's faces, and lots of things get done to people's faces and heads in the form of headshots and exploding craniums. this movie does a really smart thing in that there's one plot element involving a child that makes it seem as though that's what the main movie is going to be revolved around, but it wraps that up pretty neatly and gets you into the rest of the movie. Other than that, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Okay.
That's all I got.
Okay. And go.
All right, so here's the thing. Most of the movies we're talking about in this tournament are movies that saw Die Hard and went, you know what? That was really good. Let's do a version of that because creatively we're kind of bankrupt. Sleepless Night is a movie that, while owing a lot of its existence to Die Hard in terms of plot conventions, is also a film that far and away establishes its own voice better than any other movie in the tournament. And I have one incontrovertible piece of proof that this is true. We have Olympus Has Fallen. We have White House Down. Two movies that came out in the exact same year, both trying to do the same thing, rip off another movie. Sleepless Night is so much its own movie that even though it owes a lot of its existence to Die Hard, people saw Sleepless Night and immediately said, we need to do an American remake of that. In other words, we need to do an American remake of a film that is a French remake of an American movie. That is how badass this film is, that it cut through all of the bullshit and got directly to people's psyches that they decided in America, even though this is ripping off Die Hard, we want to remake it.
Very close. Very close, but...
I have a rebuttal, but I went last, so I can't do it.
Rebut yourself.
Go ahead.
I'm going to allow it. Can I?
I'm going to allow it.
All right. About the fact that Olympus Has Fallen is so cliche that even though Morgan Freeman isn't the president at the beginning of the movie, he still manages to be the president by the end of the film because Morgan Freeman always got to be the president.
Okay. I don't consider Morgan Freeman an argument against a movie. I'm going to give it to JC.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Final four.
Wasn't arguing against Morgan Freeman. We're arguing against cliche.
I know.
I'm going to file a grievance with the Bar Association after this tournament
State
is done.
Board of Judicial Conduct.
All right. Well, who is up next then?
Speed 2, which is Jeremy, and Cliffhanger, which is Adam.
Hold on. Can I stop for just a second? Do I have any movies left, or am I completely
out? Air Force One.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good one.
I got to fly Air Force One into the finals, or I am fucked. All right. Anyway, so I'm sorry. What was the tournament?
Speed 2, which is Jeremy, and Cliffhanger, which is Adam.
All right. First this time.
All right.
Okay, and go.
We'll talk about villains here. For any Die Hard ripoff, you need a good actor playing a good, creepy, psychotic character. And Willem Dafoe as the... I can't even remember his name. I'm sorry. As the villain in Speed 2 is just one of the creepiest, one of the most eccentric we've ever seen. For one, he's a computer genius... Who can run? He can take over a luxury cruise liner and steer it into an island. Yet, for health reasons, he feels he has to wear leeches all over his body for some reason. You know, it's just to create quirkiness. Beyond that, I mean, we've talked about how big Speed 2 is. It's one of the biggest Die Hard ripoff of all time. They bring back Jan de Bont again from Speed 1. Shit.
Okay, and you ready?
Okay. Yeah. Alright, so you want to talk about a movie having villains. And not just villains, but psychos. There are so many psychos in Cliffhanger that Michael Rooker is actually cast in the movie, and he's tame Like, he is actually a hero in the movie. You can barely name any other movie where that's even a possibility. The man playing Henry Porch of the serial killer is actually on the good side. That's how many psychos exist in Cliffhanger. Take that into account. Nobody in this film is safe. You talk, a woman dies, an innocent woman dies within the first 5 minutes of the movie. In the last 20 minutes of the movie, Papa Walton's dead. Like, there's the patriarch of the Walton family is gone. Like, they've killed the Waltons in Cliffhanger. If you want to talk about a movie that's going to take the intimidating presence of Die Hard, you can't take it any further than killing Papa Walton.
Okay. Would you like a rebuttal?
Boobs?
No. Okay, just for saying, if Michael Rucker is one of your least, if he's actually a hero in Psychos, I got to give it to Cliffhanger.
Cliffhanger! Good. Wait. What did Cliffhanger just take down?
Speed 2.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, Rennie Harlan versus Jan de Bont. Yeah, we're good.
Not a lot of surprises there.
You know what? Shit, didn't even think of that. Thank you.
Well, hold on to that, because you may get another chance here. All right, so JC.
Star Trek First Contact, which is Jeremy. All
right.
And Air Force One, which is Brian.
All right.
Okay. You know what? You want to go first or second?
I can go first.
All right.
Jean-Luc Picard versus Han Solo.
Ooh. This is literally Trek versus Wars. Mm-hmm. You realize that. This is Trek versus Wars.
Yeah.
All right. Teenage me was a Trek guy, so.
And where are we going?
And go.
And as creative a Die Hard ripoff as it is to put it on Air Force One, we've seen that before. Passenger 57 did that before. A group of terrorists taking over a plane. Executive Decision even did that before Air Force One, and that's not even on this list. Star Trek First Contact is the only movie to ever put Die Hard on the Enterprise. And not only that, it takes it outside the Enterprise, takes it into the past, it comes to Earth. I mean, that movie is, yes, it's all over the place, but it is a badass action movie. Definitely the best Star Trek Next Generation movie to come out. And easily one of the best Star Trek movies of all time. And above and beyond that, it's a really cool Die Hard ripoff. I'm good.
Okay. And Brian, are you ready?
Yep.
And go.
What these movies come down to is the question of leadership. We have Jean-Luc Picard versus the President of the United States. We have Patrick Stewart versus Harrison Ford, two highly respected actors. But where Air Force One has the advantage is that they do a great job of establishing their hero without the benefit of multiple seasons of a popular television show to pre-establish in the audience mind who that hero is. This movie, from start to finish, there have been many, 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 many other actors who have played the President of the United States. Harrison Ford had a challenge in his hand to make this president his president. Jean-Luc Picard has only been played by one actor, and that actor is Patrick Stewart. And while he does an amazing job, there is no one to compare him to, other than Kirk. No offense. But instead, Harrison Ford takes a character that's been played many times before by many different actors and makes that his own, makes it a sympathetic president, makes that a gung-ho action president, makes that a president we can respect, which over the last few years has been a real-life situation few and far between.
It's like a rebuttal.
Okay.
Oh.
Yes, Star Trek Next Generation has multiple seasons of developing this character, but that only serves to add in the drama and the internal struggle that's going on with Picard while all of this destruction is going on.
Can it re-rebuttal?
Okay, you got 15 seconds.
Glenn Close. That's it. That's all I need to say. Glenn fucking Close. I'm sorry.
Neil McDonough.
Multiple Oscar winner Glenn Close plays the vice president. A female vice president, which needs to be a thing that happens in the first place.
James Cromwell plays the character that creates warp drive.
Okay. Mm-hmm. William H. Macy.
No.
Neil McDonough. I don't know.
This is
Reading Rainbow.
Would you say this is a Glenn Close? Would you say this is a Glenn Close race?
Leading the witness.
I'm asking.
Okay.
I want to know.
And I'm not trying to take too long, but I want to explain my reasoning since this is a big decision.
This is big.
Mm-hmm. Again, when you put forth an argument and the other side doesn't combat it, and he puts forth the argument that this has been done on a plane before. And you didn't say how it differentiated from Passenger 57.
I'm talking to a judge here.
Our executive decision. I gotta give it to Star Trek First Contact. God damn it! All
right. That's fine. That's I like to lose. It's fine.
Don't yell at me.
I don't mind it at all.
Lions are gonna kill me.
No. Yes.
It's my mission in life to make this movie win this tournament now.
You've effectively taken me out of this tournament.
Sorry.
That's fine. It happens. You know, sometimes Syracuse is supposed to go all the way, sometimes it doesn't happen.
Round three, fight!
And so we have reached the final four. And the final four movies in contention for best Die Hard ripoff are...
Olympus Has Fallen, The Raid, Cliffhanger, and Star Trek First Contact.
All right, and up first is...
Olympus Has Fallen versus The Raid.
All right. Is this you versus Adam?
It is.
This All is right. you versus Adam.
Yeah.
Who's going first?
I have no preference.
I'll go first.
Okay.
Okay.
And go.
So here's the deal. Under Siege was probably the best chance that anything had of actually beating The Raid. Didn't happen. You know why? Because The Raid is not only the best film that's in this category. It's not only the best film that's in this tournament. It is unequivocally the best. Takes the best elements of a Die Hard ripoff and make something completely original out of it. Take Olympus Has Fallen. There is nothing in that movie you can argue has anything better over Die Hard. You know what The Raid has? Martial arts. Unequivocally, some of the best hand-to-hand combat you will ever see in any picture, not only released in the last 10 years, but any time, in any period, in any country around the world. I mean, you can put that movie in and compare it next to any other action movie that's out there. I mean, there's really not much else you can say about it other than the fact that, I mean, it meets all the qualifications. Badass villain and unrelenting action.
Okay. And JC, you ready?
Yes.
Okay, and go.
So, I like Michael Bay as much as the next guy. I love his movies, as a matter of fact. For those who kind of tire of Michael Bay movies, and I totally get that sentiment because there are times that I kind of feel that way. This is sort of the anti-Michael Bay. There are explosions, there are gunshots, there's blood, there's F-bombs, but there aren't a lot of slow-motion shots, there aren't a lot of the types of tropes that people kind of get tired of when they see a movie like this. What's also really cool compared to a lot of these other movies, there aren't any moments of sentimentality. A lot of these moments try to squeeze moments of sentimentality from nice moments with kids or wives or families. This has none of that. This has a tiny bit of that, not none of that. This has a tiny bit of that, but it shows it to you, then gets it out of the way, gets right back to the action. Once again, I mentioned the body count of 168. Probably one of the highest ones out of all of these movies.
Okay, rebuttal?
I mean, body count of 168. I mean, in terms of ratio... of you know, deaths to people actually in the movie, you can't fault The Raid for just having less people in it. You know what? More people die per capita in The Raid than any movie that's in this category.
Okay. Well, and so my quick rebuttal earlier, Adam, one of Adam's points was that it didn't have an iconic villain, and then in this last one he did say that the villain was bad. He didn't say iconic, but he did kind of go back to how badass the villain was. I know that's sort of contradictory there.
Okay.
For taking a Die Hard ripoff and expanding upon it, which Die Hard did to the action movie, I gotta give it to The Raid.
Alright. So The Raid is in the finals. This is going to be interesting.
Not surprisingly, I think it deserves to be there.
No, I'm not saying it's surprising. I'm just saying it's gonna be interesting to see
if the Raid can
win at all. So, JC, who is the other half of our final four?
Adam and Jeremy, one more time. Cliffhanger versus Star Trek First Contact.
Cliffhanger versus Star Trek. Just can't get enough of
you,
man.
Nope, I love you.
Okay, who's going first?
You can go.
You go first?
You can go.
Okay, hold on.
Okay.
Just get something in there. Okay.
He's preparing his arguments right now.
Mm-hmm. You ready? Just thinking of something. All right.
Okay, and go.
Okay, so the one thing that Cliffhanger has over every other movie that we've talked about so far is really is from behind the camera a direct relation to the Die Hard franchise. And that is the director Rennie Harlan, who has made some of the most questionable action movies probably of the last 20 years, but the few that he does have on his resume that are that really fit into what we're talking about tonight are this movie, Cliffhanger, and Die Hard 2. It is actually a film in the Die Hard franchise. It's technically the Die Hard ripoff. It is the movie that rips off Die Hard but making another one. So take that, take that element, put it into something in which it just takes place on a mountain. Everything else is the same. You've got a group of terrorists going up against somebody who they completely underestimate, and he just slips the rug from underneath them in classic Die Hard fashion.
Okay, and Kurt, are you Star Trek?
Look, I don't want to argue against Cliffhanger, but even John McTiernan did Rollerball. That doesn't make him a good sports director. Star Trek First Contact has an amazing villain. It took the Borg, which was such a prominent villain as a collective in the series, and it personified that entire collective with the Borg Queen. And Alice Krieg as the Borg Queen is phenomenal. She is eccentric. She is crazy. She's psychotic. She's everything a good diehard villain needs to be. And in addition to that, she's leading a team of not 12 terrorists, not, you know, 30 terrorists, not six guys on a mountainside, thousands of Borg creatures that she is controlling. And in the first 5 minutes, here's how the stakes are in Star Trek First Contact. The first 5 minutes of the movie, the Borg take over the Earth. They have to go back in time to stop that from happening.
Okay, rebuttal?
Okay, quick rebuttal.
Okay.
Okay, so you take the villain in First Contact, and really what it boils down to is that she is motivated by just complete sexual frustration. That's it. You put a dick in her, and that entire movie goes away.
Okay, and everything about Cliffhanger is sexual frustration. If you put a dick in John Lithgow, everything will go away.
Okay. How did that happen just now? How did we get on the dick argument?
I don't know, but they're very proud of themselves.
until the rebuttal, they were exactly even. But
wait, the rebuttals were the same rebuttal.
No, but let's move it. But one of the rebuttals was a joke, and one of them borders on maybe not a joke. So,
who is which? I don't know.
What, have you seen Star Trek First Contact?
I don't.
All she's trying to do is seduce Data the entire time.
We're at the deciding time here. There's no more arguing.
Respect the sidebar. Respect the sidebar.
Damn it, fine.
Okay, I'm going to give it.
We're being loud, guys.
And I can't believe I'm doing this. I'm going to give it to Star Trek.
What do you mean you can't believe it?
I can't believe it.
You're a Trekker. Of course you are.
No. Come on. Here's what I'm giving it to him. Because you mischaracterized the Borg Queen. She wasn't just out for sex.
Oh,
that was kind of rough, too.
I agree with you. I do on that point, Elliot. But I got to say, I was kind of expecting First Contact to make it this far with the Trekker as the judge.
I didn't know I'd be talking this much.
You know what? That is why we do these tournaments. Sure. Because, again, the better movie on paper, not necessarily the one that goes up against Harold and Kumar 3D.
This is just proving to myself how much I actually love Star Trek First Contact, I think. I watch that movie.
When you're accidentally getting it to the finals.
Yeah. And going back to my science ranking, this is actually the highest rated of the 16 movies.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice. Would you rank it number one?
Even over Speed?
Yeah.
Wow.
Sorry, I'm getting a little choked up.
Even over the Raid?
Yep.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
So who?
How did that happen?
Final round. Fight.
So we have entered the finals. We have come down to the last two films. This is it. This is for all the marbles. I don't know why. Why does everybody want marbles? Why is that an expression?
I don't know. You want pogs.
Well, yeah, that's true. This is for all the pogs. You're right. I'm going to switch it up. This is for all the pogs. JC, remind us, which two films have made it to the finals?
We have The Raid, which is Adam, and Star Trek First Contact, which is Jeremy.
Oh, wow. If I were a betting man, I would have put $0 on either of these movies making it to the finals. I love The Raid as a film, but I did not see it toppling Under Siege or even Sudden Death.
Since you guys are so curious, so on IMDb, Star Trek First Contact has a 7.6 out of 10 rating. Rotten Tomatoes goes up to 100, so I basically just divided that by 10 to come up with an even, a 10 out of 10 rating.
Yeah.
Star Trek First Contact, Rotten Tomatoes critics rating is 92. The audience is 89.
Wow.
I mean, it's considered one of the best Star Trek movies, but I'm surprised
it's not. All that being said, these ratings are not based on how closely it follows Die Hard.
No.
Which is an interesting, it's an interesting variable within this particular tournament, is that these movies are ranked, you know, how they're ranked based on the quality of the film, but we are judging them specifically on how well they hold up as Die Hard ripoffs.
Yeah, because I couldn't come up with a scientific formula.
Well, no, there is no. There, I'm not criticizing what you've done. I'm just saying it's interesting variable factor for this particular tournament. Yeah. But yeah, it's time to decide the winner.
I picked up on the whole sexual frustration subcontext.
This is the last time I'm going to be a judge on this.
With data, you mean? Is that what you're getting?
You've done well, Elliot. Yes. You've done well. You got to stick to your guns, man. That's the way it works. All right, so who's going first?
I went first last time. This is up to you.
This is all JK. Here we go.
All right. Yes, Star Trek First Contact is in the finals. And yes, it is a great action movie. And yes, it is a good Die Hard ripoff. But the movie, at its heart, I think, it's about being that everyman that John McClane used to be. It's about being a human being. Through the whole movie, Data has he's struggling with whether or not he wants to become more Borg-like, if he wants to get more organic pieces fixed to him. He wants to be an everyman, basically, instead of the robot that he is. And in addition to that, Picard is an amazing everyman who, yes, he's the captain of this ship, and it's his job to go into battle against these strange creatures, these strange beings, but he's just caught up in something that is so much bigger than even he can grasp.
All right.
Okay. And
Adam.
Okay. So Kirk talked a lot about the everyman, and if there's one thing that Star Trek is, it is in no way full of any everymans. Data is not even a man. Nonetheless, an everyman. Jean-Luc Picard runs an Enterprise ship. He is intelligent. He is far more intelligent than most people on the planet. You take the Raid, and it is the epitome of the everyman. It's not only the epitome of the everyman, it's the epitome of the diehard everyman. It's a cop. It is a cop going into a situation which he is unmatched for, completely out of his element in regards to what they were trying to do when they went in there. And he is relying on his savvy that he's never been in this situation before. He builds it as he's going along. And all he has is just his physical acumen. He knows how to fight and how to get at, and to the best of his ability, how to survive. And that's all he's doing the entire time, just like Die Hard.
Okay, rebuttal.
Okay.
Yes, the main character in The Raid is an everyman. He's an everyman who has clearly been raised on three different kinds of martial arts, just like we all have, right? Just like we all. He has a black belt, I'm sure, just like we all have. Jean-Luc Picard is... I thought I had more than that. I totally forgot I had less time.
Rebuttal, okay. You can train yourself to learn how to fight. Not every single person on this planet is going to be able to commandeer a starship. I mean, we're talking about PhDs. We're talking about being able to program robots, for God's sake. You cannot do that.
Rebuttal.
Okay, 10 seconds.
In the Star Trek future, every man can cruise a starship.
Okay. You done?
I'm done.
Okay. Very compelling arguments from both sides. But at a certain point, Cinderella... The ball has to strike midnight, and it's the Raid.
It is the Raid.
Good.
Ladies, the ball has to get smashed in the face.
Do no ball smashing in this room, if you would please. The Raid, ladies and gentlemen, is our grand champion of the Die Hard Ripoff Movie Elimination Tournament.
What does that mean? Am I two for two?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's also Adam winning again.
Wow. Nice. Wow. I keep, you know, it's funny. I thought I had the thing again. I thought I had the thing during that tournament, and looking back on it, I thought the thing was mine because I love that movie. But I am wrong again.
Technically, you did give that. You gave that to me.
I did.
I mean, you helped me along.
I am. Yeah. I didn't even make it. Like, I didn't even make it to the finals this time. I'm very disappointed in myself. But that is all the more motivation to work harder in our next tournament, which at this point has not technically been decided. The subject, but yeah, this has been awesome. This has been a lot of fun, guys.
This has been a lot of fun.
Blast. Yeah.
Congratulations to all the competitors and to Jeremy, our judge.
Dude, big time.
Congratulations.
Who stuck with his guns. You know what? You had some solid reasons for why you picked the movies you did, but you were also wild card enough to not make this a completely standard tournament. So.
He was also kind of really good about keeping us like, hey, make sure you're debating why or why not.
His actual legal training came in handy, and that's awesome.
That $90,000 was not misspent. Not an exaggeration, listeners.
No, I don't believe it is.
By the way, I don't know why, but I can't tell, but somewhere on here I have a note that says 6 inches shorter. And apparently that's supposed to be some kind of positive thing about one of these movies. I don't know.
Is that a comment about speed?
The rate?
Sure. I have a question for Elliot, because I had a note that I totally missed. If I had talked about the awesome stonework and speed, would that have put me over the top for speed too?
Stonework.
Stonework. The Masons did a great job.
Stonework would have been a big thing.
Yeah, the stonework and speed is amazing. Oh, well.
Oh, well, indeed. Also,
go ahead.
This is why I think speed doesn't qualify as a diehard ripoff. And I've had several people refute me on this. I'm in the minority. Who's the hero in that movie?
Sandra Bullock?
Is Sandra Bullock the hero in that movie? That's
what speed or speed?
It's Keanu Reeves.
It's Keanu Reeves. Keanu Reeves, who is sent in to deal with that situation. Yeah. So once again, we have a scenario in which basically the quote unquote hero of the film, if we're going to compare it to Die Hard, are the inept LAPD outside.
It's basically, yeah. It's less a Die Hard ripoff. You know what? Die Hard with a Vengeance is more a speed ripoff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then speed is a Die Hard ripoff.
There you go.
If I can just explain a few things real quick. The Star Trek, he just kept on making great arguments.
No.
Yeah. Dude, there's no way that I think they thought they were ripping off Die Hard.
It's a combination of things. It's a combination of Jeremy making the right arguments. And, you know, and I'm not, this is not a judgment, but you being a fan of Star Trek.
No,
that's going to carry favor.
I mean, it is a good action movie.
Yeah, no, it is. It is a good
action movie. I've never seen it. I'm actually going to go see it.
Yeah, I think that's the issue with that movie.
Well, not right now.
It carries with it the quality, and all he has to do is sort of make the argument how it can actually tie into Die Hard, which you did a really good job
about. Yeah. No, it was a good show all around. I'm very proud of all of you. Jeremy K. Kirk, before we go, please tell us again where people can find you on the interwebs.
You can always find me over at firstshowing.net and on their podcast, The Golden Briefcase. And you can also find me on Twitter at Jeremy K. Kirk.
I've already told you how I feel about your podcast and how great it is. I'm not gonna not gonna kiss your ass again for a second week
I'll
in a row.
Kiss your ass. Thank you. This has been fun. I've had a blast coming on these 2 weeks.
We'll have to have you back again, sir. You can follow this show on Twitter at ITLcast. You can also like the website on Facebook, facebook.com/oneofusnet. You can also follow us individually on Twitter. I'm at Bry Guy Salisbury.
At JCDeLeon1.
At ITL Elliot.
At @_beef.
And if you want more great content like this, we really do highly recommend you become a subscriber to oneofus.net. You can give $1 to $25 every single month or just make a one-time donation. Whatever you can give, we really appreciate. That's how we keep the lights on. That's how we keep providing you with great content. But for now, that's going to do it for this totally accurate, desperately important ITL Inside the Money tournament move. Damn it. I'll never get it right. I will never get it right. I am like Daniel LaRusso in my own show. Anywho, just want to remind you that sports are not just for jocks anymore.